So this pulpit is staying pretty hot. What do you think? Since the revival, always good stuff. So, privilege to get up and preach to people that are trying hard. Of us are. So something that will help tonight. Belt's too fat. I don't know. Think of it. Okay, so if I knock this flying, it's not my fault. It is on now. I can hear myself. Is that good? Okay. But I did want to tell a funny story first. Can I do that? So Wednesday night, you can tell funny stories. So just the other day, we were just driving into Forest Lake. Is to do some errands, or I forgot exactly what. And a little ways down the road, and we see these two turkeys in the middle of the road. And so they start walking away from us. And they didn't run off the road into the woods. They started walking away from us straight down the road, the same direction we're going. And so, you know, we're in the car, and so we're starting to get closer to them. And they still keep running down the road, and they start running faster. And I'm thinking, this is really weird. Why don't they go off? And now I'm having to let up on the gas, because if I don't, I'm going to mow them down. And now they are hauling now. They're just, and they never did go into the woods. They took off, and now they're still flying down the road like it's a runway at an airport or something. It's a weird. And they finally, then there was an opening in the trees, and they finally went off. You know, and that was just really weird. And so we got a little ways down, and I thought to myself, why didn't I just, like, run one of them down? And then I could have thrown them in the back of the car and go in town and do my errands and come home and dress it, throw it in the freezer. And I started to feel bad that I didn't do it. And then I realized it was because my wife was in the car. And so I suppressed my male hunter-killer instinct because my wife was in the car. So I don't know if any of that ever happened to you husbands here. You suppressed your hunter-killer instinct because your wife's around. Maybe next time it'll happen and I'll be by myself. And she'll be surprised when I come home carrying a turkey. But so the preaching has been good. And I guess it was last service or maybe service before. I was thinking, you know, we get all this good preaching and we come in here and it's like an oasis. And it's the Spirit just almost halfway takes you up to heaven and you forget about the world or at least the world doesn't have the same influence on you as when you're out there living in the world. But then service is over and you walk out your car and you drive off and it's like, what happened? I lost something as soon as I went out the door, back out there. And I was thinking, how can I stop this from happening? How can I hang on to what I got during the service? So I started thinking about that a little bit. And then I realized there was a couple of phrases back in 1 Corinthians 7 that just might do it. And so you can turn there, 1 Corinthians 7, and I guess maybe the last time I was up here, we worked on this, and it was along the lines of trying to learn how to look carefully at the context of a passage or a chapter and see what we can learn and to really be able to understand what the writer is trying to say. And so that's how we worked on this. And if you remember, Paul had dealt with some issues that were distracting the Corinthians. And he even used that word in verse 35. He wanted them to attend upon the Lord without distraction. And his basic admonition was, if you're going to make a change in your circumstances, it quite possibly isn't going to solve your problem. but rather let every man abide in the same calling wherein he was called. And so we spent some time understanding that. That was verse 20, by the way. Anyways, at least be willing to abide, even though you might seek a change. And we talked about that, where that's perfectly permissible, whether it's talking about getting married or perhaps a changing a job or something like that. I say that to draw you back into the chapter, because we're going to be working in this chapter. Jog your memory a little bit. But let's go back to that original question that I posed. So how can we hang on to out there what we've gotten a hold of in here during a preaching service or a worship service? And this chapter has three succinct reminders that will help us do that. And so the title of this lesson is The Three Succincts. You say, that sounds kind of weird. Well, it's how Chinese do things. They have only my two sons can probably understand this. When they make like slogans or something like that, they'll label them like the three reminders or the three importance or the something like that. It sounds weird to say it in English, but it doesn't in Chinese. So, okay, so that's where the title comes. Try to understand if you can. Languages are weird. Different languages do things differently, and it just sounds weird no matter how you translate it back to the other language. But the word succinct, it's easy to understand. It means something is compact or precise, right? And it just, it happens to come from a Latin word in the 15th century, and I actually studied Latin. Let's go this side. I actually studied Latin in high school for a year, but of course I forgot all of it by then. But so I just want to say that. It comes from a Latin word from the 15th century, succinctus. Okay, so now you know that too. But that means to be girded. So what I hope is that we get a hold of these three phrases, and they will somehow gird us. And so when we go back out in the world, they'll gird us, and we'll be able to hang on to what we got during the service. Even these phrases are so short and concise, we could, you could put them on the door or something, although we have a really good one there, so we can't put them there, but it's something that you could do, and it might help. But so if we're not going to do that, like I said, they're short, so you could memorize them all in one shot, because I'm pulling the phrase just out of the verse. We won't necessarily keep the whole verse, or that is to say, you could remember the phrase real easily. Okay, rather, if you want to go back and memorize a verse or more or something, that's great. But these three phrases, you'll be able to remember them very easily by the end of the sermon. You should be able to have them all in your head. Now, so we've been in this chapter before, and even if you don't remember what I taught last time, you've probably read through Corinthians more than once. And so how about if we do it this way? I'm going to ask you all if you can find them, okay? You have understood what we're looking for. It's a short, concise phrase, and a phrase that would help you remember, to serve God, right? to remember to put Him first, and so on. I'll tell you that they are, we can find them from verses 22 to verses 34. Okay, so they're all within those 11 verses. And so just kind of scan through there. A short, concise phrase, and these phrases, they are truths that underlie Paul's advice to the Corinthians to abide, okay? And so they're the reason that he gives this advice. And so we're going to work through each one of these three in order that they appear in the text. So just kind of look there. If you see one, just raise your hand, and you could just read it out loud. Just kind of look there, verse 22, or where are we starting? Verse 22, yeah. See anything there? Verse 23, see anything there? There we go. Ye are bought with a price. That's the first one. Ye are bought with a price. And it continues to say, be not ye the servants of men. And so we don't really, all of us are Christians here, we shouldn't have to ask who paid that price. I recognize pretty much everybody in here. If you don't know who paid that price, it was Jesus Christ that paid the price, that bought you, that bought you and I. He paid that price. Do you remember what price Judas was paid? 30, how many? Was it 33 or 30? Oh, okay. I should have checked because that kind of messed me up now. Because I was thinking 33, but it's interesting that, but I'll just give it to you anyway. The word price appears 33 times in Scripture. 33 times. It's not a thing now because I didn't study my stuff right. Never mind. See, you got. Don't skip over stuff. Make sure you check things. Turn over to Deuteronomy 23 and verse 18. Deuteronomy 23:18. It says here, "Thou shalt not bring the hire of a whore or the price of a dog into the house of the Lord thy God for any vow. For even both these are abomination unto the Lord thy God." Does the price that Christ paid equal the price of the price of a dog? Are you asking that, preacher? Well, some people go out the door after hearing a sermon, and maybe the rest of the week they spend half the day loving the world and the things in the world. So I guess I thought I'd ask. Because the people out there in the world, that's what they think the price Christ paid is equal to. The price of a dog. I know an old man, as far as I know, he never shed a tear for what Jesus Christ did or for his sins, but when his dog died, he cried. So what do they mean when they use the name of Jesus Christ for a curse word? Doesn't that mean that just his name is just as low can be? It's like this foul stuff, like the price of a dog or what a dog leaves behind him? That's not the price he paid. It doesn't equal that. Now, if you want to maybe flip it around and say, if he bought me, I don't deserve any. I mean, if you're going to cash me in, put me on the market, I don't deserve any more than the price of a dog. You might be able to say it like that. But you can't value what he did as the price of a dog. Turn to Job 28. Ye are bought with a price. What kind of price? Job 28, we'll look in verse 13. Let's read a few here. "Man knoweth not the price thereof, neither is it found in the land of the living. The depth saith, it is not in me, and the sea saith, it is not with me. It cannot be gotten for gold, neither shall silver be weighed for the price thereof. It cannot be valued for the gold of Ophir, with the precious onyx or the sapphire. The gold and the crystal cannot equal it, and the exchange of it shall not be for jewels of fine gold." So, what will you give in exchange? The price that he paid, that he bought us with, it cannot equal jewels of fine gold, gold or crystal, gold of Ophir, any of these precious things. You cannot weigh out enough to equal what he paid. So what do we give back to him? What do we exchange? Ye are bought with a price. "Be not ye the servants of men," is what Paul says on the other half. That's the only thing we can exchange, right? Be not ye the servants of men, so serve him. That's the only thing we can give back. There's no place else to find it. It's not found in the land of the living. If you could dive all the way down to the bottom of the sea, you wouldn't find enough there. Or if you could collect all of the ships that are sunken ships that still haven't been found and pull them off and pull up the gold by a ton, you couldn't give that. is not enough. But we can give him our service. Be ye not the servants of men. Ye are bought with a price. We work for others, right? Or most of us work for others. Even if you own your own company, you work for somebody who pays you to do something, probably. Nobody is really truly independent, I don't think. I think if you look at some of those people that are, you know, super rich, I think they owe a lot of debts to people that help them get where they are. At least that's what I've seen in China anyways. I don't think you can get to the top of any whatever field without owing people a lot. And so, you know, we work for others, and they pay a salary, and so we give them what they pay for. We give them our time, and we work hard, and they pay you by the hour, so we give them the hours worth of hard work, or if it's by the job, etc. That's what we give them in return. That's what it should be. But we don't give them what they didn't pay for. We don't give them what they didn't pay for. We're going to give it to who paid for it. And he bought us with a price. And so those things we owe them. But everything else, right, we owe him. He bought us with a price. We're bought with a price. So well, that's who we should give to in return. We have a lot of spiritual blessings in this life. A lot of blessings. Not just an eternal home, right? Not just a ticket, out of hell, not have to go there, and a ticket to heaven. There's so many blessings that we have, you know, while we're down here. We don't have to say, well, I'm going to have, it's going to be a great blessing, but here is just misery and it's all terrible. No, there's a lot of blessings in this life. And you can look over in Ephesians chapter 1, and that's a pretty good list. It categorizes them. And Brother Stevens has taught a fair amount on looking at those. There's a lot of them. And so I would say that we owe him for those as well, because his price that he paid bought those blessings as well. So when Christ asks us something, you know, to ask us to do something, whatever, do we remember that? All the blessings we have in this life, he bought as well. And when he says, I want you to do this, or I don't want you to do that, do we remember that all the blessings we have, he bought with a price? You know, if a person actually saved your life by risking his own life, and you can make up a scenario, he dragged you out of a burning house, your car was on fire and you're stuck in there, and he used superhuman strength and pulled you out right before the gas tank went off, something like that. He risked his own life, and because he risked his life, and now you have your life. And he asks you one day not to do something that is contrary to what you want, or to do something that is contrary to what you don't want. You say it's but it's what I want or need, or what you want me to do. I can't do that. I can't do that. And he's standing right in front of you. He said, I just can't. He said, I want you to do this. And you say, I just can't. The person that risks his life to save your life, he says, this is what I want in exchange. You remember I saved your life, right? You remember that, don't you? Yeah, I remember. This is what I want in exchange. I want you to do this for me. You owe me. Now what are you going to say? He's standing right there in front of you. You know you owe him. And he calls it in. You owe me. That's what I want you to do. How will you value then the price that he paid? Will you give it to him, what it's really worth? Or at least, honestly, we can only give it the super smallest portion if we can calculate it, what it's worth. Turn over to 1 Chronicles 21:22. Let's see how we're doing here. 1 Chronicles 21:22. Then David said to Ornan, "Grant me the place of this threshing floor, that I may build an altar therein unto the Lord. Thou shalt grant it me for the full price, that the plague may be stayed from the people." He paid the full price, not just like a representative price or a down payment. He paid the full price, the full price. And whatever you have inside of you, we can't match the full price, but what you have, you can give it to your fullest, right? We can at least, whatever we have, we can give that to him in return, the fullest amount that we have. Turn to Matthew 26. You probably know this verse. Matthew 26, verse 24, "No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. He cannot serve God and mammon." You got to pick who you're going to serve. And it's weird, you know, you have to make the choice like so many times a day. Yeah. What kind of servant will you be? Will you serve the master, the one that paid the full price? The father says of the son in Matthew 12, verse 18, if you want to turn there, "Behold my servant whom I have chosen, my beloved, in whom my soul is well pleased. I will put my spirit upon him, and he shall show judgment to the Gentiles." We're chosen too, right? And Paul also says, "He hath made us accepted in the Beloved." So as well, we're chosen, and we're in the Beloved. Just like the Father said of his Son, Jesus Christ. But how about the other part there? "In whom my soul is well pleased." How well did we fulfill that one? Is he well pleased? Will he also be able to say of us at some point in time, he's well pleased? There are different kinds of servants listed in the Bible. I mean, if you just look in Matthew, you have a couple different kinds. There's faithful and wise servant, right? That's Matthew 24. But there's also the wicked and the slothful, the wicked and slothful servant in Matthew 25. And the unprofitable servant. In Luke 12, it says, "Blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he cometh, shall find him so doing." That is the things that are profitable, right? Profitable to the master. So, now that we are bought with a price, we're his, and so we do things his way, right? And so I want to connect that a little bit to what's earlier in the chapter. This will be the last on this first one, succinct number one. Notice in verse 10 there, where Paul started talking about marriage problems, namely separating, right, and divorce, this types of problems. So why is he writing about this stuff here? Well, if you remember, it's because they asked. They wrote him asking. That's he mentioned it earlier in the beginning of the chapter. He asked them about these things. Probably some are already separated and preparing to divorce. I should add, without a biblical reason. Okay, there's biblical reasons for divorce. That's another topic. Okay, don't misunderstand me if you're divorced or etc. That's not what we're talking about. Okay, we're talking about these Corinthians here are separating or perhaps planning to divorce their spouses, and they don't have a biblical reason. Okay. So where did they get these ideas from? This group of Christians. Where did they get these ideas about how to deal with their marriage problems? Where did they get these ideas from? There may be some holdover from that, but I would say it's more likely that this is how the people, the lost people in Corinth, are dealing with these things. They got their ideas from the world of how to deal with their problems as Christians. Their problems as Christians, they get their ideas from the world about how to deal with them. What's wrong with that? Well, that's not right, right? I'm sure Brother Stevens gets the same thing. You get people, they come and ask you after they've done something, taken some action, and they say, so should I have done it that way? Did I do the right thing? No, you didn't. But it's like it's too late now because you've already did it, right? I get that all the time. It's depressing in a way because I try to make myself available to people if they want to, you know, have questions, and I'm sure Brother Stephen makes himself available to anybody that has questions about this or that. So when somebody comes and they've already done something that they shouldn't have done, and then they say, I shouldn't have done that, or should I have done that? Ask before. The Corinthians, I'm just speculating, but based on my experience, if they're writing about it and asking about it, there's already people in the group of Corinthians, Christians, that are already doing this. That's why they're asking, because they already did it. And they're getting these ideas from the world. Listen, why would we be willing to destroy one of the great blessings of God, you know, your family life, because we've been influenced by the world? Why would we do it that way? If you think about it, today, I mean, it's even so much worse than, a generation or two. 50 years ago, even lost people thought divorce was a shameful thing. You cheat on your spouse, it's a shameful, wicked thing. Now it's like normal. It's like, well, I loved him and then I fell out of love or something like that. And, you know, what's the average? I don't know, it takes about 5 years or whatever. The kids will be okay. After all, let me ask you, why will the kids be okay if their mother and father get divorced? Why will they be okay? Well, lots of kids have divorced parents these days. Oh, that's your logic? So then your kids will be fine because other kids have parents divorced. See what's happening? People can't even think anymore. They have TV shows about it. That should be able to help, right? Yeah, that will help your kids if they watch TV shows about divorced kids. They'll be okay then. What I'm telling you is their views are extreme, okay? We're going to get married, and then after 5 years, we don't love each other, and then we're going to get divorced. That's extreme. And so just like 1 Peter 4 says, wherein they think it strange that ye run not with them to the same excess of riot. And the excess ideas, extreme ideas, and they say we're extreme. Right? They say, work, our views are extreme. You go to church 3 times a week. Wow. week do you watch TV for 3 hours? Right? They can go a whole week and don't even think about God one time. That is extreme. You don't give your kid a cell phone when they're 10. Right? That, you're just excessive, extreme. But theirs has unlimited data, you know. You don't want to keep your girls and boys innocent until they need to know. But they want to force all the details on kids when they're in kindergarten. We're not going to do things the way they do things. We're bought with a price. We do things the way he says we do things, the way the book says. Not the way they do. They're extreme, excessive wickedness. It used to be you needed, as Paul said, cunningly devised fables to mess people up. I shouldn't cite movies, but there was an old movie about this con guy and his daughter. It was an old movie, Paper Moon. I don't know if you remember it. Anyways, it was an elaborate con. He set up elaborate cons, and you know that's how he could. That's the only way he could fool people. You had to use some cunning. Not anymore. The world is full of excess of idiocy and debauchery and idolatry. Why would we do things the way they do them? So we're just going to do everything that they say is fanatical. That's what we do. We're going to stay with one person our whole lives, right? We're going to read the Bible every day. We're going to sing old hymns. We're going to stay sober, right? We're not going to make our career or money everything. We're going to love God, the one it says of in Luke chapter 19 that the chief priests and scribes and the chief of the people sought to destroy. We're going to love him and cherish him. That's what we do on Christ's side, because he bought us. And we understand these things now. So that's the first one. You are bought with a price. And that's what we're going to pay back, right? That's how we're going to pay him back. That's all we can do, and that's the best we can do, and he deserves it. What's the next one now? We found that one in 23. Okay, let's keep scanning. Keep scanning down. Is it in 24? 25? 26? 27? Anybody see it yet? 28? 29? Yes. The time is short. The time is short. But this I say, brethren, the time is short. It remaineth that both they that have wives be as though they had none, and so on. The time is short. But you say, Paul said that almost 2,000 years ago. So if the time was short then, but it wasn't short, so what does short mean? Right? Well, I don't know. That one's hard to answer. Maybe I have something for you in a minute. But I was thinking about that. And, excuse me. In heaven, all these Christians that... you know, from the last 1,000 years, when they meet Paul, you know, you have the regular, the brief introductions and who you were and who you lived and so on, you know, maybe how you got saved and stuff like that. And then you say, but you know, Paul, you said back then the time was short. And I'm from 1700 something, 1729. And so what about that? And so all he's just going to do is just kind of sheepishly at the ground or something. I don't know. I don't know what he's going to say. Well, so you ask just how short it is. Well, it's definitely shorter than it was before. But, you know, Don Lemon, the CNN talking head, Monday said, he says, I'm sure a lot of people won't agree with this, but if you don't get the vaccine, you can't go to the supermarket. What? Now, I don't want to talk about vaccine, get the vaccine or don't get the vaccine, but I want you to understand what he's saying. He's saying they're going to screen people, right? How are they going to screen you when you go into the supermarket? They're going to scan you, right? They'll scan your phone. The software platforms are already made. In China, they've already had it for like 2 years. The little health code, green, yellow, red. In fact, in China, you can look in your neighborhood and see if there's anyone around you that has like yellow or red. So they've had that for a couple years. So you can stay away from that area. Because everybody's carrying their phone, right? So your phone is like you. It's like your identity. It's getting close when they're starting to be able to do that, right? So they're gonna scan you, and it's called a QR code. If you've probably seen them now. They're getting more and more popular. There was a young man in Italy, 22 years old. He tattooed his QR code on his arm. Right there. In Italy, you have to have your pass to get into restaurants and outdoor activities where there's a lot of people. He tattooed it right there on his arm, and the video showed him going into McDonald's and getting it scanned. Are we getting closer, you think, based on what the Bible tells us? I think so. You know, what else I was thinking about is, we've always thought that the mark will be, you know, it's supposed to be on your hand or your forehead, and it's going to have to have some electronic information, digital information maybe attached to it, or like even you've seen things about, oh, they're going to put a little chip, or it's actually a little capsule like they put in animals and stuff like that, and they'll scan that. And they don't have to do that. You think about it. It could just be like any ordinary tattoo. When you get the tattoo, then you give your bank information, and then they allow you to, after that, you're allowed to access your money in your bank, because it's all digital. Because you won't be able to go into a store and buy cash. So they don't need to scan your forehead. They just need to see it. And if you don't have one, you won't be able to use your money. That would work too, right? I'm just speculating, you know. There's a lot of ways to do it. It's getting closer. In Zhengzhou, with this last outbreak of the Delta, they have already tested the whole city of several million people 5 times, like in the last 3 weeks. Everybody goes and gets a test, and then they check it, and then, of course, if you have a positive test, then they come and get you. 5 times. So I asked my associate, Brother Juan, well, what happens if you decide you don't want to get a test? You're just sick of it. You don't get the test. I mean, you just stay home. They say, line up. You know, they play the whatever they do. They send everybody information. I didn't ask them how they notify you. It's time to line up. Everybody knows it's time to go line up at the various stations. And he's working as a volunteer, so he's got inside information. what do they do to you? He said, well, if you don't get your test, then your code goes from green to red. Your code on your phone goes from green to red. And you can't even go out of your yard, your living yard. You can't go out. If they don't check it at your yard and you go outside, you won't be able to get into a store. In fact, if they see you're red, they could call the cops on you. And then if you try to get back into your yard and you say, well, I live here, it doesn't matter if I'm red, they won't even let you into your yard. They'll come and get you and take you to the hospital. Getting closer? Is it getting shorter? Romans 13, I'll just read it. And that, knowing the time, that now it is high time to awake out of sleep, for now is our salvation nearer than when we believed. So maybe what Paul meant is, he meant shorter. The time is short, but he kind of like, because short and shorter is almost the same, right? I don't know. You can ask him. You can ask him. Maybe there's probably a better reason than that. First Peter 4. Oh, let me see here. But the end of all things is at hand. Be ye therefore sober and watch and pray. So, how are you going to spend this last short time that you have? If you still got your finger in 1 Corinthians 7. The second part, he says, and it remaineth that both they that have wives be as though they had none, and they that weep as though they wept not, and they that rejoice as though they rejoiced not, and they that buy as though they possess not. So his answer is that his answer to the time is short is not, and be sure you go to church once a week. Right? It's way more than that. We have to live like some of these things that we enjoy that maybe we don't actually have them. They're secondary, right? He's not saying you can't enjoy them. He said as though, okay, right? As though they wept not, as though they rejoiced not. The time is short. That should be what we're thinking about. There's not much time left. For yet a little while, and he that shall come and will not tarry. Some of you are ready to go yesterday, right? And, you know, there's a lot of blessings in this life, but there's some pain, too. There's some pain, too. And as you get older, it's more likely. And so Paul says, a little while longer. Just hang on a little while longer. The time is short. That's what it means. Just hang on a little while longer. So that's number two. The time is short. And I see by the clock the time is short, so we're going to have to squeeze in the last one in the next 10 minutes. We can do it. Hang in there. What's the next one? You guys have got to find it. How about verse 30? No, that just matches what we've been talking about. We read in there. 31. There you go. I heard somebody reading it. The fashion of this world passeth away. That's succinct number three. The fashion of this world passeth away. And so as I said, the reason he expounds on how we are to behave because the time is short is because it's all going to pass away. The time is short and then it's going to pass away. That's what happens after that. When the time is up, it passes away. The problem is there's a lot of nice, enjoyable stuff in this world, right? There's a lot of good stuff, especially in this age. Air conditioning in the summer, heating in the winter. I mean, even in Zhengzhou now, we have the in-floor heating. So when we finish the apartment, you lay the heating coils down and then you put the covering the wood on top. So in the winter, you walk along and it's really nice and warm on your feet. It's really nice. It's really comfortable. I like it. Instant gas for heating and cooking. Did I mention electricity? That's a nice one. Cars are really nice. You know how they went to church back, before they had cars? In the winter? Heat up the bricks, put them by where you sit, so you put your feet on them, then wrap up in blankets. And then the horses take you to church, and then everybody brings in their bricks and throws them in the fire somewhere in the back of the church, and then you load up the bricks, and that's how you did it back then. It's comfortable now. Wire mesh window screens. Say, what? That's no big deal. Are you kidding? You know what it was like before? You had wire mesh window screens? You couldn't open your windows. You'd be mobbed with mosquitoes and flies. You guys forgot it this year because they didn't come around, right? Because of the weather is so weird. There's no mosquitoes this year. I've completely forgotten that there's a thing that exists called mosquitoes, pretty much. The other day, we got in a car and started driving, there's this thing flopping around and flying up against the windshield. What is that? What is that? Oh, it's a mosquito. Oh. You know what they used before they had wire screens? Cheesecloth. How long do you think cheesecloth tacked up your window would last? It didn't last very long. And so they didn't have even wire screen till the mid late 1800s. It's a lot of nice stuff. We have a lot of nice stuff, a lot of comfortable stuff. But isn't going to be the stuff afterward isn't going to be a lot better? I mean, we sometimes forget because it's so nice and we're enjoying it so much. All the stuff on the other side is going to be way better. Brother Kyle just taught on that. You think you have a nice apartment? Your apartment will be way better over there. So why do I care if the fashion of this world pass away? So when you go out those doors, do you think the fashion of this world passeth away? And there is a world to come? Paul uses that phrase, doesn't he? The world to come. The fashion of this world. So what does he mean? Fashion. That's not like fashion industry or something like that. It's how something is made up or structured, right? How is this world made up and structured? Now, I'm not talking about, how the trees communicate with each other. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about how the God of this world has fashioned this world to serve his purpose, to blaspheme God, hinder the gospel, and damn souls. That's how he's fashioned this whole world. Everything about this world, except for the trees and stuff, what you enjoy when you sit out outside or maybe you go on vacation or something, is all fashioned by him, and that is the purpose. But it's all going to pass away. And then he that is called the dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil and Satan, he will be bound 1,000 years. Him too. I'm looking forward to that. All right, we better finish here. So I'm going to read you 15 verses. But you don't have to turn to them. They're all verses that talk about this world out there, the one we're going to go back into when we finish here. So it'll just be kind of like an audio Bible, and you just sit there and listen, okay? I suppose I could stand on one leg while I do it. Do I need to do that? No? Good, thank you, guys. I don't think I can read out loud while I stand on one leg. I probably read silently, but not out loud. The Lord said, and he said unto them, ye are from beneath, I am from above. Ye are of this world, I am not of this world. And if you're not saved, he's talking to you. You are from beneath, and he's not. He's not of this world. Jesus answered, are there not 12 hours in the day? If any man walk in the day, he stumbleth not, because he seeth the light of this world. So if we're going to get by out there, there's only one way to keep from stumbling, right? We watch the light of this world. Jesus answered in John 18, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight a physical battle, right? But we do fight. And the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches and the lusts of other things entering in choke the word, and it becometh unfruitful. He that loveth his life shall lose it, and he that hateth his life in this world shall keep it unto life eternal. And Paul says, be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. He says in Ephesians, wherein in time past ye walked according to the course of this world. Remember? According to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now worketh in the children of disobedience. And it worked in us too, right? Before we were saved. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Howbeit we speak wisdom among them that are perfect, yet not the wisdom of this world, nor of the princes of this world that come to naught. But we speak the wisdom of God in a mystery, even the hidden wisdom, which God ordained before the world unto our glory, which none of the princes of this world knew. For had they known it, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. But I don't think they necessarily wanted to know either, many of them, right? But as it is written, eye hath not seen, nor ear heard, neither have entered into the heart of man the things which God hath prepared for them that love him. It doesn't mention this world, but it's right in the passage. Just, I want to read it anyways. It's a good verse. Amen. Herein is our love made perfect, that we may have boldness in the day of judgment, because as he is, so are we in this world. Now is the judgment of this world. Now shall the prince of this world be cast out. Now that's John chapter 12, and he wasn't talking about casting out of the world, unfortunately. But I'm sure John was very happy when he got around to writing Revelation 11, where he was able to write, and the seventh angel sounded, and there was great voices in heaven saying, the kingdoms of this world are become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever. There you go. There's three short phrases. Ye are bought with a price, right? The time is short. The fashion of this world passeth away. Next time you go out the door, just run through your head. See if you can't hang on to, see if you can't hang on to what we got in here. And we remember that, so when we go out, it's not this like this kind of brainwashing osmosis that kind of like sucks it back out of you. We're gonna hang on to it, right? All right, so let's finish up. We can stand. I don't know if we were gonna sing. Did we have another song here that was picked? 314? Yes.